Welcome to Women in B2B Marketing, a show where CMOs, VPs of marketing, and all strong women leaders in B2B discuss their top tactics, strategies, and tips for building high-performing teams, leveraging trends, and ultimately rocking their marketing careers. Made by and for women, insightful for all. I'm your host and 15-year B2B marketer, Jane Sarah. Let's dive in. Okay, welcome everybody to another episode of Women in B2B Marketing. And today we have with us the one, the only Jodi Spencer, who has been a friend of mine in Rev Room, which we'll get into. She's also been in marketing, leading marketing and ecosystem teams for 20 plus years. There's so much we can learn from her. She's a fractional CMO and GTM growth advisor to many. She's also co-host, co-creator of In the Hot Seat. And like I said, fellow Rev Roomie with me in Rev Room with Jared Robin, and everyone check out Rev Genius and Rev Room if you haven't yet. Welcome, Jodi, to the show.
Thank you. So awesome to be here. Wow, I was listening to you give that rundown. I was like, I want to meet this person. You made me sound so great.
It's all you. It is cool when someone like lists the things you do and you're like, oh, yeah,
I know.
Go me.
Wait a minute. Did I really? Only part that I'm kind of like, oh, over 20 years.
I know. I talked about that with a couple of guests, like when I've mentioned, I'm like, is there a cutoff of when we stop counting the years? Because it's like, you know what? We should own it. When it gets to 50 plus years, we'll be like, 50 plus years of experience. Yes. That's
decades,
what you want.
Decades and decades.
Right? Exactly. We got to own it. Switch the narrative. But welcome. I know there's so much we want to dive into. I always like to start with just kind of a lay of the land and how you got to where you are today. And if you could walk us through your career getting into B2B marketing.
It was almost by accident, to be honest. Ooh. So when I first started out, I worked in the association side of things. So cool. Not in tech, not in B2B marketing. I was more on the PR and communication side. And then it evolved and I ended up moving. And when I moved, I was looking for, you know, a job that would highlight my PR and communications capabilities, and ended up being a temp for a company, filling in, doing, you know, front office work while I was looking for a job. And during this time, they had a need for marketing. And obviously I had, you know, a background in marketing. So I kind of stepped up to the plate and said, okay, hey, I can help out, right? Let me raise my hand. So I started helping them. And from there, I went from being the front office temp help to their in-house marketing help. And then I just moved my way through and started working more on their technology side. And that was my foray into the technology world.
Nice. I love that you raised your hand. I feel like that's a common theme that I want to emphasize on this show, like putting your name in the hat and like getting yourself considered for anything, right? For opportunities.
We have to, right? We have to put ourselves out there. That's the most important thing. And I think when you're first starting out, it's really difficult to put yourself out there because you don't want to make mistakes. God forbid you make a mistake, right? We learn from our mistakes. And I don't think I really appreciated kind of putting that fear aside and being like, it's okay, I can take on a challenge that I might not fully be comfortable taking on. But mistakes are the best learning tool, because if we're doing everything right, then we're not growing and we're not learning because we already know it. Mm-hmm. Right. So to me, mistakes are part of that growth pattern. So yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. Put your name in that hat, raise your hand and put yourself out there as soon as possible.
Love that. So I want to jump into a core hot topic for us, because this is how you and I first started chatting about this in Rev Room and our Slack group. But death to the funnel.
Yes.
I know there's so much talk, right, about the funnel is no longer a funnel. The funnel is now a bow tie, or the funnel is now a squiggly line. And there's all these different visuals that we get now for the new funnel or the anti-funnel.
Yes.
But can you walk us through your stance on this? Because I think you sold me last time we talked about this.
Well, my funnel kind of looks like an infinity circle or an infinity loop. Death to the funnel has been around for years. I think you're right. Mm-hmm. We're hearing more and more about it because the go-to-market motions have changed, which correlate to that funnel structure, the traditional funnel structure. The customer journey is no longer that, you know, large funnel, moving them down there, you're getting to that perfect spot. And then suddenly now they're a customer and now you start moving outward. No, that's not what happens anymore, right? We all agree that the customer journey, they're coming in more educated. They're coming in ready to buy. They know more about you than sometimes people within your organization know about you based on, you know, the research that they've done, the community discussions that they've had. They're very educated. And we have to make sure that we're communicating and engaging with customers in that journey throughout the entire life cycle, which if you think about it, again, we don't know where they're coming in. We might be looking at someone who we would normally consider a initial prospect, right? Top of the funnel, let's feed them that generic content just to hook them, only to find out really where they are in their process. They are so educated. They've talked to people who have used you through community, and they're now at this really high technical investigative stage, right? And that's where you need to start the journey with them. So to the funnel is this infinity loop, and you've got to meet them where they are. And the reason I say infinity loop, a person does not come through an organization like this and go out on the bottom half of the bow tie, right? What's our goal as an organization? We want to keep and retain customers. Well, that customer is going to grow with you over time, right? They're going to be buying new services. They're going to be interested in new technologies that you have to offer or services. So if we think about where they are in their journey, we're going to be talking to them at different points in that cycle for different products, different solutions. A person could be at four different points in that infinity circle or in that infinity loop the entire time that they're working with you. And we have to adjust the way that we're interacting with customers. So yes, the funnel is gone. It is dead. Yeah. It is, forget it. It's now the infinity loop.
Yeah. Do you get an eye twitch whenever you hear the word funnel coming out of like marketing?
I do. I take a deep breath. I'm like, okay. Funnel. No, we don't funnel anyone anywhere. Do you want to be funneled? No.
Yeah, that's true. It dehumanizes your prospects. It gets them more labeled. That's true.
I mean, it's almost like when we talk about form submission, right?
Yes.
The submit button. Do you want to submit when you put a form in? No. Do you want to be funneled somewhere? No. Meet me where I am.
Words matter.
100%.
What do you use? Like if you're talking to head of sales and you're discussing, okay, we need to drive pipeline. What word do you use in place of funnel? The journey? Is that what you say? Or the infinity loop?
We talk about the journey, the customer interactions. Journey to me implies this experience over time, right? The customer experience, the customer journey, a customer engagement. Each of those words have different nuances, but that's how we want to make sure we're talking internally with the teams, because we don't want someone... Here's actually a great visual representation for me when I'm trying to educate internally.
Yeah.
Just as a funnel implies a process with someone going through your organization, if you think about what that visually represents, that translates to internally, right? You're bringing someone down through marketing. Now they've become a customer. And now as they start going out the other end, it's a different department's responsibility, right? Because now they're a customer. Yeah. So now they move over to sale. That's not today's world, right?
Yeah.
Marketing, sales, product. We all need to align. We all need to stay in communication for every customer. That makes our job way more challenging.
Yeah.
We don't hand off to different departments internally. I love we're talking, it's introducing another teammate because, you know, you said at the very beginning, how do you work with sales managers and sales departments? We work together as a team, right? To me, marketing, sales, product, customer success, we're all one. Gone are those departmental silos. Because the customer, again, in their journey is going through all of those different traditional departments at one time. They're in their journey, potentially interacting with marketing, talking to sales, working with customer success at the same time for different pieces of your solution. So we have to act like that. We have to communicate and engage. So yes, the word funnel is gone. The word journey is in. The word experience and engagement are key. And we're forgetting the word. We're eliminating, just as we're eliminating the death to the funnel, we're eliminating the term handoff. We're introducing teammates, and you're staying connected throughout that entire relationship.
I love that. I'm just making a note real quick, because I'm such a believer that words matter, and changing it from a handoff where you're literally passing something and going like this. Right. If you can't see me on the podcast, I'm putting my hands up like it's not mine anymore. Hot potato. It's instead you're introducing. So you're bringing people into the mix instead of passing this lead and non-person to the next team.
Well, and think about what that implies to the customer too, right? Now the customer is like, well, wait a second. They're introducing me. They're talking about this in terms of a team approach. They are cohesively working together. What is the most frustrating thing as a customer when you call in and have an issue? And you have to reiterate your problem or your concern 5 times, right? You talk to the help desk, the customer service, then you're moved up to another field agent and you're going through and you're saying the same things over and over. Nope. Those words, again, communicate teamwork. Everyone's going to be working together to ensure my success.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's also like you're building during the sales process, even the marketing, when you're getting exposed to content or you're talking to marketing leaders on LinkedIn, right? And you're then looped in, you're looped in with sales, you build these relationships. So if you're passed over to somebody in CS and you're saying bye to the marketing and salespeople who you built these relationships with, it's very cold and you no longer have that brand affinity because who is this person? We don't have that relationship yet.
Yes, 100%.
That's so important. I think we've touched on this before, but I'd love to dive in and get a refresher. I am fully bought in. I think funnel, especially after talking to you just now, funnel and silos kind of go hand in hand. And we always say we don't want silos. We need to break down the silos, right?
Yes.
So also in the process to do that, we have to break down the funnel and re-envision it. But I still use terms, and we've talked about this, and I'm sorry, but I'm admitting I still use tofu, mofu, bofu. Uh-huh. It's the HubSpot in me. I've been just in HubSpot for way too long. I don't even know if they use those terms anymore, but I still say those. So do you still even see content and being in a tofu, mofu, bofu, or is that all gone too? And it's a different way of thinking of content too.
The way I like to think about content is, to me, those terms are gone. I don't even talk about them in terms of that journey. Because again, where I may think someone's at the top of funnel and I would be delivering content in a certain way, they truly may be at the bottom of the funnel, but I haven't received enough signals outwardly to know that that's where they are, right?
Yeah.
We have so many different tools at our disposal now, which gives us a lot of data points, but there's still a lot going on the dark side of things, right? I'm not even going to say dark funnel, the dark side of things, right? And we have to make sure that our ear is listening for things in the communities and the referrals and the networking. So back to the question on content, I like to think about content in terms of the journey. And this is going to almost sound like what I'm saying is top of funnel, bottom of funnel, but bear with me here for 1 second, because content is educational at different points through that journey, right? Something that is more generally speaking, where you would normally put something at the top of the funnel just to pique somebody's interest, they're not necessarily looking for that general content, right? They're looking for how can I justify what I'm thinking when I'm going to engage with your company, right? What type of information am I looking to answer my questions? And this is where the signals become important. So content to me is an answer to a signal And I'm going to get confusing here because you're like, okay, well, wait a second. That kind of sounds like top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel, but it's not, right? Because somebody may be on your website looking at something where you think, hey, this is a signal to me that says they're just, they're interested, right? They're looking at a couple of pages. They're checking out some webinars that we've done. But then you know that this person might be engaging in some different communities or on a G2 site looking for reviews. Now,
yeah,
if we think about how we traditionally developed content and where we would push that content out based on how someone, the questions that they're asking, mm-hmm. I've just given you 5 different signals right now. I've totally messed up your idea of where I am, top, middle, bottom. As opposed to putting educational materials out there, it's ungated. Someone is self-serving and finding this information, reading it, and then raising their hands later in the process. We used to use content as a gating process, right? Like we gated everything. Yeah. And that kind of told us where they were in the funnel.
Yep.
Nobody wants to fill out a form these days. The only content that you're really gating are the high value research reports or something that is ROI calculator, maybe, that you're putting information on pricing that's maybe sensitive, right? That's the type of information that you're gating. So the content has just become a library. Yeah. And somebody is looking at that content. You don't know who they are because you're not gating it, but you just need to make sure that you're educating all the way through that journey.
Yep. I love this. You're making me think of, I was just talking to somebody else, to Olga Naho, and she was talking about The Go-Giver, which I hadn't heard of this book, and it's apparently super well known. So yes. I'm just out of the mix, but it's the same concept. Like you give and give and give all of this content, and then you can go by signals and see if there's a right time to connect, but it's all about providing value, not what can you give me and what can I get from you? It's switching that mentality.
Yes.
And you know what you're making me think too, also, is I think as marketers, we often, or previously thought, okay, if they're looking at G2, they're in BOFU, right? They're lower in the funnel that no longer exists. Uh-huh. They're ready to buy. But I go to G2 all the time to start my learning, right? And to be like, okay, what companies do I need to look at? Okay, cool. This exists. And then like months later, I come back and I'll think again, like with more info. But like you said, a lot of it comes, I mean, right now I could be instantly sold on something by recommendation in a community that we're in. Somebody says, I saw this result from this tool. Check it out. There's a free trial. I'm going to that today and I'm going to check it out. So
best advertisement, right? Getting somebody, and it's unsolicited. It's not paid. Yes. It's not sponsored. Yeah. I will tell you that when I'm searching for tools or I'm looking for something to help my clients, I don't go and search on Google any longer. I go to my networks. I go to my communities. Hey, this is my pain point. What do you got? What's going on, right? Where are you finding value? Yes. And in the past year, I have to think about this. I honestly think in the past year, every tool that I have implemented has come from a community recommendation.
Wow.
I really don't think I've gone out to a search engine and searched for anything.
Yeah, it's true. Because we're also, after so many years in the space, I think we just know who to trust, who take guidance from, and we don't really have time to go do that research and pull together like a spreadsheet. Like, you know, when I first started out, it was all about, okay, I'm evaluating marketing automation platforms.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a million rows and columns to present. Yes. Now it's not so much like that. If Jody refers something to me, she's like, this one worked for me. This is exactly what you need. I'm going to go check that out. I don't need a matrix anymore.
100%. And think about what that does for marketing, for us as individuals leading marketing for clients, organizations. 100%, right? Before, I could bid the highest dollar value to become number one on Google or Bing. Yeah. I could go and sponsor an advertisement in a newsletter or, you know, some external source. Customers have become privy to that, right? They're like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This was paid for, not interested. Yeah. Let's go and look elsewhere. So as marketers, it's definitely, I think, made a lot more challenges for us to think outside the box.
Yeah.
I think the go-to-market motions have not only changed, I mean, obviously they changed, but they become expedited in terms of how quickly we have to think on our feet and shift priorities. I mean, our priorities as a marketing group could change on a daily basis, right? Before we had a little bit of a luxury. We had time. There was a change and it took a little bit longer for different companies or different groups to catch on to this change, right? An experiment. You had time to experiment. We don't have that luxury now. Yeah. Experimenting and analyzing, pivoting, and learning from that experiment happens pretty quickly. I don't know about you, but I mean, I set out some of the time on a week, I'll talk with a client on a particular initiative, think I have it all set. I'm like, yes, this is the way that we're going to move forward. And then suddenly by Wednesday, something has changed, right? A new technology has driven the way in which we do something differently, results that are being generated. And now suddenly we're like, oh, wait a minute. I have to go back and scrap that plan that we just talked about on Monday. And I know that sounds dramatic, but that is how quickly we're moving these days, right? We do not have months to experiment with things.
That's so true. That's so true. Especially the past couple of years when every day feels like crunch time, right? And you have to get these numbers up and you have to meet certain quotas and the do more with less, right? There's less time to experiment. And you're right. The experiments are just way faster. They're probably not as statistically significant as they used to be, but you see indicators of directions and make decisions.
Well, it's the other thing that I find really interesting is when you're working with companies. So in my fractional capacity, obviously I work with a number of different companies at different stages in the organization.
Yeah.
And it's a telling sign for me when we get into the conversation of, okay, how many leads do we think that we're going to bring in, right? This is the number that we need to hit from a metric standpoint. Those standard numbers that we used to go by, I honestly don't believe exist any longer, because it's more to me about a quality versus quantity. And when I talk to clients who are still stuck in that quantity metric, that's a red flag for me. Because the motions of today do not align to that quantity number, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I can go out and get you any number of leads.
Yeah.
Right. And they're going to be junk leads because the numbers are no longer, we're no longer dealing with the tens of thousands or hundreds, depending on where you are and your brand. The quantity is no longer relevant to how you build your pipeline. I truly believe that. I have a lot of conversations on this because I'm probably more in the minority on thinking about it this way. But before, you used to be able to do mathematical equations to figure out, okay, this is my pipeline. This is the number I have to hit. This, and then you back it up, right?
Yes. Yes.
In the past 3 years, I have not had numbers that have aligned. I've either exceeded the revenue numbers with lower quantity because we focused on the quality, right? And the ICP, I think the conversation needs to change on making sure your ICP is nailed, making sure your value prop comes through clear, your messaging is clear, and you're driving conversations with more qualified, right? This is all, we're all talking the same way, but there's still conversations. There's too many conversations that I hear people having that deal with that quantity. That quantity can no longer be said with a level of confidence because those individuals are not in the buy cycle at any given time. Quantity is another thing that I want to do away with in terms of the marketing conversation. Depth of the funnel, quantity of leads, building pipeline. I'm just going to do it all away.
Yeah, no funnel, no silos, no funnel, no and no focus on quality.
Someone's going to listen to this podcast and be like, she's what?
Or they're like, preach. This is what we wanted to focus on. Now, how do we get the C-suite involved and or the board on board?
Yeah, and right. Because when you sit there and you have to say, okay, what do my numbers look like to a board? That's a really hard conversation, right?
Yeah.
But again, coming back to those numbers and thinking about where people are in their journey, in their process, any given time, they are not prospect, a lead may not be in the buy cycle. So if I'm bringing you in 100 leads of individuals who are not in the buy cycle, but maybe, you know, you're going to just nurture them, really? Or I'm just going to put a tag in them and keep them in the database and maybe do a reminder email, you know, down the road. I mean, that's not creating a relationship. That is not building a brand. That's not meeting them where they are in that journey. I would rather focus on and have 50 quality leads versus, you know, 150, 200 leads.
Yes. You're making me think, and I looked this up to get the exact number. Hockey Stack released a report in the past week, really, that said it takes 2,600 impressions to win a new customer in B2B. I'm curious, and talking to you, like we're talking about community-led growth, which I want to get into next. Mm-hmm. With community-led growth, it seems to be way fewer. Because like I said, if you refer something to me, I'm signing up.
Right.
If it, you know, fits my need, you've tried this before, it works, I trust you, I'm going to go try it. That's one impression.
Right.
And it gets me in. So I'm curious, averages, right, are just in the middle. So I'm sure there's community-led growth, which skews it very much on the lower side. And paid media, maybe that skews it way on the higher side. I'm curious what your thoughts are on this report, right? This 2,600 impressions per closed one account and community-led growth and how those kind of work together.
Oh, community-led growth. That's another topic I love talking about. Right? Good old Jared. He's totally made me see the light on the other side of community-led growth.
Did he coin that?
I don't know that he coined that, but he has helped, I think, make it more driven, more awareness around community-led growth, right? I love his, he always talks about it in terms of the movement, as opposed to like when you think about tactics and programs, right? It's a movement. Yeah. I just love that because it's so spot on. But back to your question on metrics versus kind of how we go to market today.
Yeah.
I have not read the latest report, but that number seems high to me given how I know most of my colleagues that I talk to and my communities have pretty reasonable numbers. There's some that I'm in that are thousands. There's some that I'm in that are hundreds and some that are smaller. That seems really high to me. I have to do a little more research around that.
Yeah. I'll send you the post that I saw about this. So you can look in the comments and talk all about community led underneath it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Let's dive into community led growth in general. Mm-hmm. So there's so many X led growth motions now, right? And there's another term that I think is the same as community-led growth, but I'm seeing it a lot from Comsor, they're doing a great job of marketing in general. They're all over my LinkedIn feed, but they say go to network instead of go to market. They want GTN, go to network. So it's very similar. It's like tapping into the importance of building true, authentic relationships. And that is where all of the business really happens now in these communities and your relationships.
Yes.
So yeah, talk to us all about why you're fully on board with maybe not go to network, but community-led growth.
I actually like this idea of go to network. I have to dive into that one a little
bit
more.
I'll send you that too.
Thank you. I'm going to have a lot of reading after we get off this podcast.
Sorry, Jody. Homework.
The community-led growth is, I think, for most companies, one of the most fundamental areas that teams need to be thinking about and need to put resources and a strategy in place, right? Because here's the thing. Community-led growth, community has been around for a long time, right? Think back to, I'll say decades ago, we won't go into how many, but years ago, you had customer portals, right? And think about opening that up and allowing customers to talk to each other on your portal. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. That was a very self-contained environment. The conversation could be managed. The support manager could be in there deflecting some conversations, right?
Yeah.
Companies tend to be a little bit more reserved in letting people talk with each other. So sometimes it was just like, hey, we'll allow employees from your organization talk to each other, right? So that was really the start and the genesis, I think, of community in the sense where the support portals, where they started opening it up.
Yeah.
Then it evolved fairly quickly to review sites, now start having communication openly when something is posted and people start talking back and forth, right? So now communities evolved. So because that's a level of community is on, you know, some of those review sites. And now we've come around to the point where community is truly, to coin Jared's term, a movement, right? Where it's open to pretty much anyone and everyone. Sometimes, yeah, you have to fill out a survey or confirm that you're not a bot or that you have the technology, but you don't necessarily have those guardrails that are placed on you for the community. As a company, when you're going down this idea of community-led growth, I think the hardest part for organizations is realizing it's about you showing up. It's about you providing value. It is not about you finding leads. It is not about you advertising. It is not about you pushing you or managing the conversation.
Yeah.
Right. Really important. It is about you showing up and providing value. That is a hard thing for organizations who are not fully behind transparency, exposing some warts, right? Because let's face it, in these communities, sometimes there's conversations that you don't necessarily want out there. Here's the thing, that conversation is going to get out there anyway, right? So have it in an environment and have a team that's listening to those conversations that is able to, and I want to use the word manage very carefully here, because when I say manage the conversation, I do not mean restricting what is going on and what information is being put out there. Because again, we have so many different channels now, that information is going to get out. But it is about how you respond, how you mitigate, how you remedy the situation. And then afterward, making sure that the solution is something that can, will then likely, if you handle it the right way, it's going to have a positive response on the back end. Well, like, yeah, this company, here is my issue. This is how they resolved it. They now have my business, right? Here's a, here's a problem I was encountering with their product. This is how it was resolved. Great company, great customer service. So community-led growth is critical for any organization. I really don't feel that community-led growth is something where I think that was really poor English. I feel that every organization needs to have some level of a community strategy, because it's going to happen whether you're helping to kind of create what that community evolves to be, or you're going to be managing several different channels where you're monitoring to making sure somebody's talking about you either positively or negatively, right?
Yeah. Do you think with community-led growth and community in general just becoming so important over the last few years, especially, just even more important than it used to be, do you think that there's even more of an emphasis on the product itself? Because it feels to me like there's only so much marketing can do in this dark social, right, community space.
Yeah.
And if you want those authentic referrals and recommendations from peers to peers in a community that you're not in or that you're monitoring, but it doesn't mean as much if you say it on behalf of the company. If you want that to happen, it seems to me that it comes from having a great product that people want to refer. So I feel like so much of the emphasis goes back on product and maybe product marketing to then be able to amplify that in dark social.
I would say yes to that question on product, but I'll also go a step further and say it's also your customer success team as well. Because you may not have the best product with all of the bells and whistles, right? Company A compared to company B. You may not have the best product, but what you have is an amazing support and success team who is your partner in your project, right? They are an extension of you. They are helpful. They are helping you resolve. They're helping you get up and running. So I think it's a combination. Product will is your first, right? Because if you don't get somebody in with product, if they cannot find the value quickly, have ease of use, then of course, right, you're not going to have a converted customer and then have that customer success. But on the situations where you do, yes, it's product and then next level product plus customer success.
Yeah, that's so true. And on the marketing and sales side, how can we, I mean, we're all one, right? And we're aligned. So it's constantly having that communication and conversation with product and CS and helping them and supporting them, enabling them. But on the flip side, like what we have direct control over on marketing and sales with communities, how do you see us getting involved and without being pushy? And again, like you said, you want it to be an unsolicited referral, right? And non-paid for.
Right.
So just an authentic, genuine recommendation from peer to peer. So what can marketers and sales leaders and managers do inside these communities that are that's just authentic and not like an eye roll generator?
So you heard me say before, just show up. And what I mean by that is show up for the questions being asked that may not have anything to do with you. Right. If you're in a community and your only response or your only engagement is at the point where in the end, something comes back to you specifically, or it's your product or your company, that's a very one-sided engagement in that community. Show up when questions are asked. Some of the time, you know, you might not be the best choice for a solution. It's okay to recommend a different product or a different service based on what the opportunity is. I mean, I have had some of the best engagements that I've had with customers in the past. I actually referred them to a competitive solution, right? What they were looking for, I knew that what we had in our product was not going to satisfy their need, but my competitor had something that was a fit for them. I've just built an extreme amount of trust with that individual when I recommended another person's solution.
Yep. Right?
That didn't necessarily get me that lead immediately. Now I want to be careful because this snippet could be taken a ton of ways. I am not saying recommend competitive solutions, but again, it's that idea of showing up and providing value, right? Someone's asking a question. You're like, okay, this isn't me, but I know company XYZ can handle that. I'm going to post about that in the response.
Yeah. Honesty and integrity.
Absolutely. Honesty and integrity are so important. That is your brand.
Yeah.
Right? Trust is so important.
Yeah. It just makes me think of Chris Kringle, right? And who knew we could learn so much from Miracle on 34th Street, right? Recommending like, oh, okay, we don't have it here, but you can get it down the block at this other store. So
yeah,
I love that. It's
just be a resource, and it doesn't always have to be about you. That's the important thing I think companies have to really think about. And that's a hard thing. I will tell you that having those conversations internally, people get very defensive. Right? Because you don't want to show and that you are not perfect. But guess what? Everyone knows you're not perfect. There is no perfect solution out there. Someone does not have the perfect solution for every situation. It's okay.
Yeah. I love that. So just when you're in these communities, show up, be yourself, be honest, add value where you can, and don't constantly be thinking, where can I sell my brand? Where can I sell my brand?
Yes.
It's okay. They ask this question. Do I have advice on that? Or can I tag someone who could help here? Add that value and think with that because you're playing the long game, right?
I love that.
You're establishing these relationships.
It's the long game.
Yes. Okay. That sounds good. Cause you can, and you always spot it right in communities, cause everyone's about communities now, and some it's still, I know it's been around for a long time in different formats, but the community led growth is concept is still so new, it seems, and like Slack groups and this new age of communities.
Yes.
Where I see people, there's always those people, right, that are just like always talking about their brand or always pushing and like just speaking at you on LinkedIn too, right? It's like, here's our latest article and yes. We just made this release and we did this and watch this. They're talking at you in the community and on LinkedIn, et cetera, whatever space you're in. But there's not, these groups are meant to be conversations, right? Yes. Not speaking at other people.
Change the word at with.
Yes.
Right? Talk with me.
Okay.
Have a conversation. Yeah. You said it perfectly. Have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Conversational engagement is so important. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be talked at, right? Yeah, I don't want stuff thrown at me.
Yeah.
I want to engage in a conversation. I want you to help me. I want you to help give me guidance on where I should be looking. I mean, some of the best communities that I am in, they never ever talk about their product. Yeah. You know why I will buy from them? Because they're building a foundation. They're building a community where I go for valuable information. And I don't hear about their product all the time, but I'm connected with like minds, with like individuals. The power of that brand is, I mean, that's unbelievable, right? Because then when somebody says, oh, this is the tool that I'm looking for, I jump immediately to, oh, wow, you know what? The community that I'm involved with, the company that runs that has that solution. And they're not out there pushing it on me all of the time, but they're giving me this, they're building this educational community. It's extremely powerful. It could derail very quickly. However, big caution on that, right? Because again, companies can embark on this community-led growth strategy. And you're going to have that little voice, right? That's doing the pushing the brand, pushing the you, and that is not what it's about. So if you're going to start out, if you're sitting down, no matter where you are in your community-led growth journey, if you're just starting midway, or if the words in the back of your head are, how can I sell my product? As you're building that community, you will fail.
It so often is, right? From the CEOs or founders, that's the first question. Like, how will community-led growth help us sell our product?
How many leads am I going to get out of this? Probably none the first
Wrong
year,
mindset.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't talk about leads, but how much brand recognition am I going to get?
Yes.
How All much brand equity am I building up? That's the important thing.
Do you recommend, like when you're speaking with your clients, there's different avenues you can go as a brand, right? Number one, probably for everyone, their people should be in these communities, like listening, seeing where they can add value. That's probably foundation for you, for every client. But, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but on top of that, when do you recommend creating a community versus like sponsoring a community so that you can be there for another brand impression, right? And it's like sponsoring. Like, do you recommend one of the two, or what indicators put you down each path, if either?
So this was a conversation actually that I was having with Jared, and I have to say this is Jared's advice, because it was something, you know, when I was starting out in my fractional life, figuring out when exactly did we bring this idea up with clients and how do you build it? And he said something really important, creating a community, and I'm not going to get this right word for word. So I'm sorry, Jared, if you're listening to this podcast, but when you're building a community, if you're solving a problem, right? If you're doing something to solve a problem, then the community should exist. If you're building a community just to promote your brand, then it's not the right avenue or tactic. So back to your question, when I'm talking with clients, if the client is not in a position where they're able to bring a unique value prop, right, and begin to get individuals together and start conversations around something unique, a specific challenge, then it might make sense, instead of starting your own how do you sponsor, right? To your point, do you go out, do you find communities that exist and do you get involved there? Do you help sponsor? Do you help bring resources and align yourself with that existing community? Because the one thing that you don't want to do is build a community for something that already exists 1, 2, 3, 4 times.
Yeah.
And those individuals have a much greater following, right? So that was his advice to me. And it's something that I've followed for the past year and a half. And I think it was very valuable advice. So thank you, Jared, if you're listening.
It is. And I know we've mentioned Jared a few times in this episode. I'll link to him if you're not familiar. He created Rev Genius and Rev Room. So I'll put him in show notes too, so you can check him out. Definitely worth following. Jody, do you have a few more minutes? Because there's one last question I want to dive into. But okay. We were talking or touching on this a little bit before we turned on the mics. You've already gave us a ton of value on death to the funnel, community-led growth, basically what we need to get rid of and what we need to embrace in 2024 and beyond. I'm curious if you could walk us through your biggest career hurdle or challenge thus far. I'm sure there will be more because life is fun like that. But
oh, there have been so many challenges.
Life.
I think the biggest one that we were kind of talking about initially is this idea of overcoming imposter syndrome. Everyone faces imposter syndrome. Let's be honest. No one, I shouldn't say no one, but very few people can walk into a situation and feel that they got it all. They got all the answers. They know what they're doing. They, no mistakes are coming. They're fully capable. There's always this level of hesitancy when you're taking on something new, when you're putting yourself out there. And I think for me, the biggest hurdle that I've had to face is being able to be comfortable with that uncomfortableness, right?
Yes.
And taking on new challenges, the idea of fake it till you make it, some of the time when you're early in your career, that is the only way that you're going to make it, right?
Yeah.
You have to go at something with confidence. So to me, my biggest hurdle, especially when I went into, I'm going to be honest, moving from a full-time CMO role and then venturing out into the fractional space.
Yeah.
There were a lot of self-doubt questions going on in my head. Like, could I do this? Could I build my own business? Yeah. Could I, you know, I've had this safety net of having a company before. If I made mistakes, there were other people around to help me. Am I equipped enough in all the areas where I need to be in order to make this successful? Well, here's the thing. I am experienced in a lot of different areas, and I think I bring value in a number of different areas, but not every aspect of marketing. There's certain things that I'm not an expert in, but you know what? I have the connections to tap into a network to either bring somebody into that conversation or reach out for help and say, wait, I don't know how to do this. What's your best advice? So that to me has been the biggest hurdle through my career. Cause I do feel I go back to everyone, I think, experiences imposter syndrome, even though they don't necessarily admit it.
Yeah.
I do tend to feel that females, I think, feel a little bit more, right? We tend to really doubt a lot of areas of our expertise and putting ourselves out there.
Yes.
So that's been my biggest hurdle.
Yeah. I think that's such a big one. And I battle with imposter syndrome every day in different facets, right? Yeah. It's just life, I feel like. But, and I do think women at least talk about it more. Like it's a topic for us, and I haven't heard it as a topic for men. Yeah. But I mean, subjective. But externally, when I'm looking at other people, right? If I am looking to someone for advice and they say, oh, you know what? I'm not an expert in that, but I know someone who is. Let me pull that person in.
Yeah.
I instantly have so much more respect for that person because they're not bullshitting me. I'm not expecting them to be an all-knowing human being to advise me on all the things, but they know someone and they can bring someone in that can help us have that conversation. Yeah. If anything, my respect for them is amplified, magnified from just owning what you don't know and being able to help solve it alongside you. So good reminder to like think of that vision when you're like, oh no, I'm supposed to know this. What do I say? Like own it and loop someone in.
And hand in hand with that goes that statement right in the back of your head. If I'm this, I never want to be the smartest person in the room. I really don't, because you have to always be learning. Right. And you cannot possibly know everything.
Yes. I think I was interviewing Marioli from Apollo, and she said she hates the term guru because she's like, I'm not a guru. I'm still learning. I'm always learning. I'm never going to be a guru because that implies you know everything, you're all knowing. She's like, no one's a guru.
Or an expert.
No human. Yeah.
Guru and expert,
that's
right?
Interesting.
Yeah. Are you ever really an expert?
Yeah. I mean, especially in marketing, can there be an expert? Because
I don't know.
It's always changing so much. Like you said, we have to scrap an idea from last week because now it makes no sense with what's changed. It's crazy. Whew, marketing keeps us on our toes. Well, Jodi, thank you so much for everything you shared and for staying a little bit later. I really appreciate it.
But oh, no, this has been fun. So I love it. Thank you for the opportunity. Come on and join you for the conversation.
Yeah,
we are going to destroy and obliterate the funnel. After this, one's going to use the word funnel or silos or handoff. There we go.
I'm going to start testing myself. I might start, you know, there's like a swear jar.
Yes!
I think I might start a swear jar for the word funnel.
I love
it. And every time I say that or tofu, mofu, bofu, I'm going to put a dollar in and see how broke I get.
There you go. It's infinity.
Right?
It's journey.
Journey. I love it. Everyone, it's a challenge. A women in B2B marketing challenge. Start your swear jar for fun.
I love it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jodi, for coming on the show. So great chatting with you today.
Thank you. Awesome to see you. Have a great rest of the day.
You too. And thank you everyone for listening. If you like the show, rate the show, give us a review, share with a friend. We all know how reviews work. It gets us in front of more people. So thank you for the love as always. See you next time.
Bye.